My name is Anastasia, and a few days ago, something happened that makes me sick. We moved to an East Coast town about a year ago to be closer to family. So close, in fact, that my aunt, her wife, and my cousins are only a 10-minute walk from my house. Granted, we are very spaced out and borderline rural despite living about 15 minutes from the outskirts of a big city. I was walking my two little dachshunds back home from my aunt's house. My mom hates it when I'm alone the majority of the day, so I spend time at their house and I was genuinely enjoying my time. It was cold but quiet and oddly beautiful. I got home, fed my pups and two birds, and FaceTimed a friend. I was talking with them and doing chores and was admittedly being loud and giggly when taking out the trash of the cans on the side of my house. I get back inside and lay down in bed still chatting when my bird starts calling at someone. Now, anyone who has owned a parrot knows that they have distinct noises for certain moments. She has been in my family for 76 years and with me my whole life, so I knew the sound was alarm or intrigue. I brushed it off as her seeing herself in the window reflection and go back to talking to my friend. I get up to get water and my back is to the sliding glass door, thankfully locked, and my friend has the wind knocked out of him. I'm confused and I think he's hurt and he tells me, "Go back to your room, now." I scoff, but then I see it in my camera view. There is a man with his face and hands pressed up against the glass door. He's a middle-aged white guy in a gray pullover and dark pants, and a grin on his face. My friend, ever the best in panic situations, tells me, "Don't look at him, just go to your room." I was shaking so hard. I'm blubbering and decide to lock me and my dogs in my closet. My parrot is still going crazy. English isn't my first language, and it's bad when I'm shocked, so I revert back to my native language, which he doesn't know. Luckily, my friend knows to take charge, and he tells me that he'll be over in 10, and he calls the police. I'm thinking that I can run to my mom's room and find the gun, so if the guy comes into the house, I can blow a quarter-sized hole in his chest. I'm debating getting up when I hear tapping on my window. It's slow and intentionally creepy, and my stupid dog starts barking. I'm ready to accept my death at that point. I'm a teenage girl, home alone, and I'm about to die. Wait, my aunt should be about to leave for work right now, and I shoot her a quick text. "Emmy, there is a man at my window, please help me." The tapping has stopped, and I think it's over when I realize something that makes my heart drop into my stomach. I left the front door unlocked when I took out the trash. This keeps getting worse, and I beg my friend to hurry. The tapping thankfully returns to my window and I can only close my eyes and hope that someone gets here fast. It feels like an eternity, crying to another teen who's breaking multiple traffic laws. Never before have I ever been grateful to hear another man's voice yelling outside my house at 1 a.m. It was my godsent neighbor. Apparently his pregnant wife was having bad nausea and went outside on the deck, and where it's situated you can see my whole backyard. She got a bad feeling after seeing the unfamiliar man approach the door and woke her husband to check it out. And I thank God every day for her because I think she saved my life. I let my neighbors into my house and my aunt comes about 4 minutes later, packing major heat, and my friend not long after. I go from home alone to an impromptu house party of concerned people. The police come like 10 minutes later, like they didn't just take 30 minutes to arrive to the scene. What the freak, is this normal? On the brighter side, my bird wasn't too alerted by this encounter and went back to eating not 5 minutes later, and my dogs were just happy to see people. My friend has been staying the nights with me since, and I'm finding it hard to be home alone despite the fact that an arrest was made. And I'm so thankful that my neighbor had such good instincts and that my aunt and friend were so quick on their feet, because this could have turned out a lot worse.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so.
Mm. I am currently 34 years of age, and before becoming an entrepreneur, I worked as a model. Approximately 2 years ago, I decided to start my own magazine company. My initial motivation was to provide my son with a financially stable life. However, as I became more focused on earning money, I unintentionally neglected my son's emotional needs. When I resumed my modeling career a few years after my son Lucas was born, he would plead with me not to go to work and instead spend time playing with him. However, as he grew older, his focus shifted to only asking for money. Lucas was 12 when I first started my company. After retiring from my successful modeling career, I knew I needed to work even harder to ensure that my business would reach the pinnacle of success, providing financial stability for us both. I was determined never to suffer from economic instability again, so I did my best to make it successful. Amidst being swamped with work, I received many complaints from my son's school regarding his lackluster academic performance and failure in several subjects. Fearing for his future, I sat down with Lucas one night and informed him that he would be attending additional tuition classes henceforth. Lucas remained uncharacteristically silent throughout our conversation, and once it was over, he retreated to his room. Overwhelmed with guilt for scolding him, I made amends the following day by giving him some extra money on top of his monthly allowance. However, to my dismay, he didn't seem thrilled or grateful for the gesture. I was planning to ask him if he needed anything else. However, just as I was about to speak, my phone rang. I looked at the screen, and it was my secretary. The meeting with a substantial client about to start in half an hour. With that in mind, I postponed my conversation with my son, thinking I would talk to him later. Yet, as I turned to leave, I couldn't help but notice the expression on his face. It was a peculiar look, one that gave off an eerie feeling. His demeanor was nonchalant, as if utterly indifferent to his surroundings. It left me with a sense of unease as I walked away. A week passed, and I completely forgot about that due to all the work swarming on my desk. Then one day, I got a call. Cindy Carter speaking. Who is this? The prolonged silence made me question whether anyone was on the opposite end of the line. With the idea of disconnecting the call already in mind, I considered the possibility that someone had unintentionally dialed my number. However, just as I was about to hang up, a young voice, attempting to sound older, emanated from the receiver. Quit your work and play Free Fire with me today, or your son dies. I glanced at the illuminated phone screen, suspecting that some mischievous youngster was attempting to pull a prank. However, my speculation was swiftly contradicted by an authentic groan emanating from another child. This was no fabricated groan, but a genuine expression of discomfort or pain. I don't have time for this, kid. Tell Lucas to focus on the extra classes I have assigned him instead of pulling silly pranks. I disconnected the call after saying that, and went on to focus on the task at hand with a disturbed mind. There was no way someone would kidnap my son only to play some RPG game with him. This had to be a prank. But when did Lucas start to act out? He has always been such a quiet kid. As I was thinking that, my phone started ringing again with the same number on my screen, making me uncomfortable. This time, the phone sounded different, sounding more profound and more robotic. This is not a joke. Play a game of Free Fire with me, or your precious son will die. What are you kids doing? Put Lucas on the phone. He knows better to disturb me at work. I tried to command the kid on the other line, but only heard a laugh. You're not the one giving orders here, miss. Check your phone. I'm sending your son's picture. He disconnected the call, which was followed by a notification. As I opened the image, I was horrified to see Lucas all beat up, tied in a chair, while unconscious. I immediately started dialing 911, but then a message popped up. "Don't you dare tell the cops, or your son won't make it till my arrest." This was no little kid who was trying to play harmless pranks. Whoever this person was, his behavior indicated a severe sociopathic tendency. Despite feeling unnerved, I refused to give in to their demands. Instead, I feigned compliance and followed their instructions, while simultaneously alerting my close friend Mason, who happens to be a law enforcement officer of the situation. While playing, I could hear the same robotic voice trying to converse with me, but I remained silent. About half an hour went by, when suddenly, a loud gunshot pierced through my headphones, causing me to jump in fright. My heart pounding, I urgently asked for an explanation, only to hear Lucas's voice sternly reply, "I specifically warned you not to involve the authorities, didn't I?" And right after that moment, my gaming partner abruptly logged out, leaving me in shock and confusion. In complete panic and confusion, I repeatedly dialed the number from which I had received threatening calls, only to hear the receptor say it was turned off. My hands trembled as I reached out to Mason, desperate for answers. What he told me was so shocking that it caused me to recoil in disbelief physically. "Your son has shot his friend. Social services are taking him." I immediately took my car and rushed to where he told me they were holding my son. And when I got there, he was in pretty bad shape. He seemed scared. But he still told them why he did what he did. He said he didn't think I would call the cops. And when he saw a cop entering, he fired the gunshot out of panic. Unfortunately, the bullet hit his friend. Upon questioning where he found the gun, he said he got it from some biker gang member after giving him all his allowance and the extra money he got from me. He only wanted to spend time with me, so he planned all this with his friend and got beaten up to make it look convincing. Luckily, his friend didn't die and was admitted to a hospital. After everything he told them, social services took him from me, despite my pleas and begging. My negligence cost me everything and could have cost an innocent boy's life. It was the day I realized no amount of money was worth losing my son. I'm trying my best to retrieve my son from their grasp, yet regrettably, all my attempts have been in vain. I want to do better with him. I want to improve my relationship with the one I value the most by offering him something far more valuable than mere money. Genuine affection, which he has yearned for all this time.
Just to give some context, I'm currently in the UK, and the town where I live in is known for its drug scene, but doesn't have a violent crime problem to speak of. I think that's why I found what happened so shocking, because I lived in London before, and while some messed up stuff did happen to me there, it was nowhere near the level of what happened to me earlier this year. My partner and I live together in our flat, which isn't a relatively busy residential area. I work from home, however, and he's out of the flat quite a lot, so I guess it might look to an outside observer like I live alone. Our flat complex was once an old factory, and we have these huge industrial windows, so people walking on the street have a pretty clear view of our dining room, which is where I work during the day. It all started in July of this year. I'm ashamed to say that I can be a major rubbernecker, and a lot of drama occurs on the road outside of our flat, so I look out of the windows often during my workday for some light entertainment. The best was a two-hour breakup I got to watch unfold in the car just below our window, but that's besides the point. One day, I got up to make myself a cup of tea, looked out of the kitchen window, and saw this guy just staring at me. I was struck by how intense it was and how he didn't look away, even when it was obvious that I was looking back at him. I felt creeped out by it, and I tried not to let it bother me. We have a lot of drug addicts and other weird characters that hang out around here, so it didn't seem like such a big deal. I went back to work, and by the time I'd sat down at the table, he was gone. About a week later, my partner had gone to visit his dad for the weekend, so I was excited to hunker down and catch up on some of my favorite shows alone. After about 30 minutes, the buzzer to the flat went. The buzzer is so loud and it scared the heck out of me. I was lucky my popcorn didn't go flying out of my hands. Now, our flat complex has this big porch where teenagers and addicts love to hang out because it provides shelter from the rain and about 4 people can sit down inside of it. Sometimes people lean up on the buzzers by accident when they're hanging out in the porch, so I assumed that was what happened. After a few seconds, however, the buzzer went again, and again, and again. Someone was pressing it in this rhythmic pattern. It's something I know my partner does when he's forgotten his keys, and it's kind of our code for me to let him in, which is why I found it so disconcerting. At first, I was worried he might have missed the bus to his dad's house and had decided to come back to the flat. I was nearly about to buzz him straight in when I thought it would be a good idea to pick up the phone first and check who it was. As soon as I picked up the phone, the person standing near the intercom must have heard because they said, "Hello?" It was definitely not my partner. I asked who it was and why they were buzzing the flat so late at night, but all they said was, "Can you let me in?" I asked them why they wanted to come in, and they said, "You invited me, remember?" While they were talking, they kept kind of laughing under their breath, and the whole exchange put me on edge. I told them I had no idea who they were and just hung up. I was expecting them to start pressing the buzzer again, but they didn't. After a few minutes, I crept out of the flat to have a look at who was on the porch, but they were gone. My partner has to get up early for work, whereas I'm more of a night owl. Most nights, I'm up until about 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. working on my laptop while he's asleep. A few nights after the intercom incident, I was on my laptop watching YouTube videos and realized that we'd forgotten to take the trash out. This happens a lot, and it's not uncommon for me to take the trash out at around 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. At least it wasn't until all this happened. I put my slippers on, grabbed the bag of trash, and took it out to the curb outside the flat's main entrance. When I looked across the street, there was this guy standing on the opposite street corner. He was watching me, and his eyes followed me all the way from the front door to the curb. I noticed he was smoking, so I assumed he lived in one of the houses across the street. I remember even thinking, wouldn't it be creepy if he tried to come over here? As I put the trash bag down, I caught a glimpse of movement out of the corner of my eye. I looked up and saw him walking in a straight line across the road towards me, with his eyes fixed on me the entire time. I don't know how to describe it, but the look on his face filled me with this instinctive sense of dread. It felt like someone had just turned my stomach inside out. I pulled my keys out of my hoodie pocket, turned around, and ran to the front door. I've never felt that kind of fear before, and it was like my body was compelling me to get as far away from this man as possible. I got into the building, slammed the door behind me, and rushed to my flat without looking back. I didn't want to know whether he followed me or not. I told my partner about the whole thing the next day and how shook up I was. We agreed that we'd be more proactive with trash, and I've never taken it out late at night again. Fast forward to the beginning of August, about 2 weeks after the trash incident, and I'd pretty much forgotten all about it. I was still too scared to go out late at night on the road, but nothing weird had happened since then. I went to bed at about 2 a.m., but I felt restless for some reason and struggled to get to sleep. By about 3 a.m., I was contemplating whether or not to give up and go do something else when I heard the scream. The sound cut right through me. There was something visceral about the terror in that scream. I knew it was bad because my partner went from stone cold asleep to being up in a shot. He asked me what it was, and I said I didn't know. I went to the window straight away and looked out. Down one of the side roads near our flat, I could see headlights, but I couldn't get a clear view of the car. The screaming continued in bursts, and after a while, I could make out words. It was a woman, and she was saying something like, "Get out, get out," over and over again. I'm used to hearing all kinds of domestic arguments take place on the road outside of our flat, particularly since we're near the university and several popular bars. But this is different. There was this raw fear in her voice that made the hairs on my arm stand up. I turned to my partner and said I had to call the police. When they picked up and I explained what was happening, they seemed disinterested at first, but the operator's tone changed when I told them where I was. I think they must have been getting calls from all around the area about it. It was sometime during this phone call that I heard a screech of tires and the screaming stopped. The operator asked me to go to the window and describe to them what was happening. When I looked down, there was this black car sat on the road. One of the neighbors from across the road was speaking to the two guys in the car. I had to twist to get a good look at them, but one of the guys in the car looked uncannily like the guy who had been watching me when I was putting out the trash that time. At first, the conversation seemed congenial, but it took a turn when the neighbor asked them some sort of question that I couldn't quite hear clearly, and they sped off down the road. With no less than 10 minutes, three police cars arrived and had blocked off the roads leading to our flat. Our residential area is on a grid system. They were knocking on doors and asking to speak to all of our neighbors. I told my partner that we should go out and speak to them, and since we saw a lot of what happened and my partner had had the foresight to write down the license plate of the black car. When we went out, there were these two girls talking to one of the police officers. They were both shaking, and one of them looked as though they had been crying. I decided to stand nearby and wait for the girls to finish before speaking with the officer myself. What they said made my blood run cold. They were from one of the houses that looked out directly onto the road where I had seen the headlights, so they had a clearer view of what had happened. Like us, they had been alerted by the screaming and gone straight to the window. From what they could gather, the black car had cut off a small red car on the road. I pulled right in front of it, and that's what had caused the girl driving the red car to scream the first time. They thought it might have been some kind of misunderstanding, but then they watched as one of the guys from the black car got out, walked to the red car, and jumped in through the window. That's the point when the girl must have been screaming, "Get out, get out." There had been a struggle, and the girl watching said they assumed the guy was just trying to steal the car, but then he forced the driver into the back seat, and that's when he drove off. The two girls were both hysterical by this point, and you could tell they felt guilty for not intervening. I could feel that same guilt seeping into my thoughts as well. After the guy had driven off in the red car, the two men in the black car had gone the opposite way and turned the corner onto our road, but had been stopped by another neighbor. Although this neighbor had been alerted by the screaming, he hadn't actually witnessed what happened, so he had stopped the black car to ask the guy what was going on without knowing they were involved, and that was the exchange we saw. When the guys started acting suspicious, he asked them if they would wait for the police to arrive, and that's the point when they took off. It wasn't until we got back to the flat that I started to put two and two together. I have a small red car, just like the one that the girls had described, and I normally come back at night on that day of the week since it's the day I go to visit my parents. I had only come back early on this particular occasion because I needed to let a plumber in to do some work on the flat. What if they had been waiting for me, and they had gotten the wrong car? Over the next few days, I contacted the police several times and checked the local news, but I never heard anything about the girl who was kidnapped. I still have no idea what happened to her, and all I know is that they found her car abandoned somewhere not far from where she was taken. But she wasn't in it. It still gives me chills just thinking about it.
When I was around 15, I lived alone in a two-story house. Although there were bedrooms upstairs, I would sleep on the living room couch. This was for two reasons. One, it was the central location of the house, so I could hear everything too. It was equidistant from every exit. One night, at around 2 in the morning, I heard someone juggling the front doorknob. It was slow, cautious jiggle, like they were trying not to be heard. When the door didn't open, they didn't stop. The jiggling slowly became less cautious and more irritated. They persisted for at least 2 minutes. We went to the back door, which was also locked. if I didn't want to call the police because I was an unemancipated minor living alone. I didn't want to be placed into foster care, and I didn't want my parents in trouble for neglect. Eventually, the jiggling stopped. I stayed up that night waiting for them to try other entrances, but nothing happened. A few nights passed, and I awoke to the sound of the door opening upstairs. The doors in the house would really stick, so they took a lot of force to open. When he popped them loose, they'd make a loud scrape pop and shutter noise. At the time, I would take sleeping pills. It made it really hard to fully awaken, and I'd sometimes only awaken with sleep paralysis. I couldn't determine whether I dreamt the sound or whether I woken up from it. I started to fall back asleep and thought I heard the door close like grinding of wood rubbing together. Then the sound of bed springs screeching like weights were being shifted. I thought, maybe someone is homeless and they thought this was an abandoned house. I was super tired and wasn't sure if I was actually conscious. I fell back asleep and awoke to the feeling of somebody watching me. There were stairs parallel to the living room door, and I could see them from the couch. Halfway down the stairwell, I could see a long-haired man crouched over, looking at me. It was dark, and I felt like we were both trying to verify what we were seeing. I kept a metal baseball bat by the couch and grabbed it. Slowly, the man erected his body and without turning backed up the stairs. I just listened for him to leave or waited for him to come back down. But I heard neither. It was like he just stood at the top of the stairs waiting for me. I didn't go back to sleep. I heard nothing, even until sunrise. When I left for school that morning, that question what I'd actually experienced. I had my boyfriend over later that evening. As we approached the house, he said, "Hey, your windows are open." I looked in the room to the sticking door was wide open. I told him what I'd experienced the night before, and he helped me check out the house. After finding nothing, I enclosed and locked the windows. I figured it must have been a hobo. Once they realized somebody lived there, they left. I still stayed there that night, but I didn't take sleeping pills. I woke to the door opening again. This time, I knew it was real. They knew somebody lived there, but they still returned. At this time of my life, I had little value for my life. I had no fear of death because I knew where I'd go. I decided that I wasn't going to hide in my own house. I got my baseball bat, turned on the lights, and went upstairs. I yelled something like, "Listen, buddy, I'm coming up. Be out by the time I get there." I heard nothing and prepared for the worst. I checked the rooms and the closets, but I found nothing, and the windows were still open. I checked the downstairs and found nothing as well. I felt pretty silly after finding nothing, but still stayed out that night. I got ready for school the next morning and saw that the window was open again. It occurred to me that I hadn't checked under the beds when I'd done the search. I didn't have my bat with me and bailed. To think that intruder was possibly hiding under the bed as I searched the house is spooky, but I'm partially relieved that I hadn't checked. If I'd been down and come face to face with the man beneath my bed, the story may have ended differently.